You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space, a monthly podcast of artist talks, panel discussions, and other events.
Tēnā tātou katoa. Nō mai hoki mai ki tēnei kaupapa kōrero o The Physics Room. Nō mai, whakarongo mai, whakatau mai. My name is Abby Kinane and I'm the director of The Physics Room, a contemporary art space dedicated to developing and promoting contemporary art and critical discourse in Aotearoa. Based in central Ōtautahi since 1996, we assist artists with resources and opportunities to enable creative and professional development and work to support the acknowledgement and understanding of contemporary art among New Zealanders. Our goal is to actively seek links between the arts and other areas of cultural production, and to involve art as a contributing voice in wider intellectual, social, and political debate.
Kia ora tātou. My name is Amy Wang, and I am the curator at The Physics Room, and this is episode 41 of Art Not Science. First up in this episode, we'll be sharing an artist talk from our current exhibition, The Way Things Are, by Tāmaki-based painter Brunel Diaz. Then we'll share with you a selection of poems by Nicola Farquhar as part of our latest publication, Heavy Trees, Arms and Legs. The Way Things Are by Brunel Diaz compiles images of intimate moments held within family albums and personal documentation. In these figurative paintings, Diaz uses colour, touch and pattern to depict her external world, embedding this with the complex emotional and psychological relationships with her subjects. Gathering together multiple times and locations, Diaz's work disrupts fixed ideas of identity, affiliation, and home, gesturing towards the notion of self as formed and constantly reformed through accumulated and inherited traces of history. The Way Things Are includes a series of large, unstretched canvases. Tacked across the gallery walls, these paintings appear skin-like, their raw edges uncontained. Significant life events, such as Diaz's baptism and her sister's first Holy Communion, coexist alongside paintings of mundane activities, her brother cleaning the toilet, or her mother straightening her hair. In gathering together both public and private moments, Diaz's work seems to propose an alternative for thinking through diasporic experiences in Aotearoa, a self-identification that is fragmentary, determinedly specific, and entangled in time. In choosing to paint her own family and loved ones, Diaz presents the audience with Christian Indian bodies, South Asian bodies, diasporic bodies, engaged in everyday activities that disrupt easily recognizable representations of what it is to be other in Aotearoa. Embedded throughout the works are clues that situate Diaz within a specific migrant context, as a daughter in the wake of Portuguese, Catholic, and British colonialism, rising Hindu nationalism, and Tau'iwi agitation. For Diaz, tending to these historic traces is also an act of love, providing a way for navigating complex notions of identity and affiliation. Now, let's hear from Brunel.
Oh, maybe you could start by introducing yourself and maybe telling us a bit about your practice, maybe touching on one or two ideas.
Mm-hmm. Kia ora everyone, my name is Brunel Diaz and I'm from Tāmaki, Makaurau. I was born in Mumbai and I migrated here in 2008. Since then, I've just always been interested in painting. Recently, the past few years after doing my master's in 2020, I became really interested in painting my everyday environment, which includes the people that I love, my family, my friends, and the spaces that they occupy. Yeah, and I think that happened during lockdown. I love working with the figure in the ground and kind of playing with composition and breaking down colors and spaces and pushing brown skin into the background and bringing whites and stuff forward and seeing how they complement and work together.
Yeah, I remember seeing your grad show at AUT last year, and similar to this show, there were lots of these large-scale, unstretched canvases, and I was really taken by the subject matter within them. And when we first started working on this exhibition, you were interested in this idea of drawing from your everyday, as you were saying, or from your external environment or the domestic environment, and also placing these side by side with paintings drawn from family photographs. Yeah. Can you talk a bit about why you were interested in doing that?
So firstly, I talked about this just before, but I became really interested in painting my family because during lockdown, inevitably, like all of us, we spend a lot of time with the people that we lived with. I suppose it was like a kind of healing. I've had interesting family dynamic. I've moved out and come back and lived with my family during that time because I had to. And yeah, I guess we grew closer in some way, or I was kind of learning to trust them. And painting is inherently a form of studying. It's a way of studying people and their gestures and how they occupy space. And so that was a way of me studying my family, getting to know them in ways that I would otherwise not look at or appreciate. Other than that, I'm also a very sentimental person. I love looking at old photos. I think maybe as a migrant, I don't know, but maybe also because it's my personality, I look at old photos a lot. Maybe every year I'll look through this big box of photographs. They're the only things that I actually care about that are like family heirlooms, if I say so. But I usually would give those photographs more importance to the present, if that makes sense. I kind of feel like I'm always living in the past. And so lockdown was like the only time that I was actually forced to be present and study my family in their daily habitual environment. So yeah, I guess pairing the past and the present was a way of harmonizing the idea that neither is more important, that they just kind of live together.
And maybe did you want to say how you made some of these paintings? Like, you talked about studying your family. Like, did you paint these from a photograph or from life?
As much as I'd love to like pull up a canvas and start painting them, I take photographs of them. And in the past, I would not ask them because I didn't know I was painting them. But now that they've grown to know that I sneakily paint them, I'll ask them for pictures. I'll say, "Hey Bradley, is it okay if I take a picture of you cleaning the toilet?" And he'll say, "No, no."
Yeah, and you were also saying that like they kind of enjoy it actually. Seeing themselves in these paintings.
They wouldn't say it, but I think they do. Yeah, there's a lot of humor to it as well. Like, we have fun with it. The first time I painted something like this was in my master's and my postgrad show. I remember there's like a 2-3 meter painting. It was my sister sitting at the dining table with my mum, and her hair was like undone and she was, you know, sleepy and stuff, and I wanted to paint that. I remember taking pictures, she didn't consent to it, and I painted it, and when she walked into the room, she was like, "No, no, Brunel," and everyone was there, she's like, "I look terrible," and I think she still likes it, and I think, yeah, from then onwards, I thought, I should probably ask them.
I wondered if we could talk specifically about some of the works in the show, maybe Mango Season, which is the large painting on the wall behind you all. For me, this painting was really significant because it's one that we've talked about again and again, and something, I know it's an image that you've also returned to throughout your practice, and could you maybe tell us the story behind this work?
Yeah, I was looking through photographs as I do, and I came across this baptism painting. I didn't even realize it was me until someone told me. It's my first self-portrait, I suppose, and yet it's not about me. It's about the two women with really colored, textured 90s blouses. Yeah, I guess it was taken at my baptism in 98, and called Mango Season because I was born in May, which is like mango season in India. And I guess this painting was about, now I think about it, it seems to be talking to the two women and their relationship more than it is about me. See, my mum is holding me and there's a woman in a brightly yellowy green shirt. And she lives here. She lives in Aotearoa in Tamaki. She's probably the only relative here in New Zealand. that we have like blood related, but yet, you know, we've due to dramatic family dynamics and whatnot, we've kind of grown apart and we don't stay in touch with them. It was just nice to kind of go back and reflect to not only my birth, but then also the circle of meeting them in Aotearoa and then maybe one day rekindling with them. Family dynamics are, yeah, they're a funny thing. Like all families, we have strange relationships and strange aunties and uncles that we don't talk to. And so I think this painting for me was just like a little wink to my auntie who lives in Flatbush.
One thing that I really responded to in your works was the unstretched canvases and the raw edges. For me, I think those raw frayed edges are wanting to like be part of our world, or they even kind of look like stretched skins. And I wanted to know, why do you choose to paint on unstretched canvas?
I've spoken about this, like, I guess I started stretching on unstretched canvas when maybe 6 years ago or something. It was a pragmatic decision because I didn't have any frames and I just wanted to start painting. And I wanted to paint large scale. So it was first a pragmatic decision, but then over time it sort of moved towards being a bit more conceptual. I love working with the unstretched canvas because I can really get in there with like visceral, gestural marks. I feel like stretched canvases, they have too much bounce, which is fine sometimes. I still, you know, work with stretched canvases, but I do have a slight preference towards the kind of unfinished, raw, tapestry-like quality of unstretched work. And yeah, I mean, you were talking about skin. I've only recently reflected on that. I didn't think of it as skin, but of course it's like skin because I am painting skin at the end of the day as well, and so the unstretchedness speaks also to the fact that I'm kind of caressing or touching the people that I paint.
I think there's a really interesting analogy between these images that you might have looked at multiple times over an extended duration and the way that you paint, or the act of painting itself. For example, in the painting of your adopted grandmother, there's a kind of, I guess, equivalence between the action of combing and also the way that you've painted her hair so that it almost feels like you're caressing the subject. And I wondered if that was something that resonates within your practice.
Yeah, I mean, you brought that up and then I thought, oh my gosh, yeah, that's what I feel like I do. And this year, for the first time, I felt really teary when I was painting Gloria Inhale Exhale, because it did feel like I was brushing my Nana's hair. And of course, like, the painting brush obviously relates to hands, and then the skin of the canvas kind of feels like skin itself. And so, yeah, metaphorically, it does feel as though I'm touching something that doesn't exist, or longing towards something that I yearn to be part of. Her hair, her skin,
Could you also tell us a bit about the context behind this image? This is of your grandmother, but you haven't seen her for a while. Is that true?
Yeah. Gloria is a beautiful woman I met when I was 4. She just loved our family and told us to call her Nana. And since then we've called her Nana, so she's not, you know, officially adopted. But that's what it's like in India. You call like everyone auntie and uncle and stuff. And she's certainly part of our family, if not more than our relatives that are blood related. Yeah, I guess this image, I took it when I was in India for the first time after migrating in 2018. And I don't think she realized that I even took that image of her. But she was just combing her hair and like minding her own business, because that's what she does. It's like her hair is like her character. It's how she, I don't know, that's just her. And so for me, it kind of reminded me of these religious paintings of Mary and like the Madonna and the sort of glow around her. And also her name is Gloria. Like everything about it is like very Catholic. And I wanted to... Well, I didn't want to do it, but it just happened while I was painting that this kind of, it felt like a ode to her?
There are some moments in these paintings that I feel like are almost inside jokes or maybe legible to people who know what they're looking at. Mm. Do you want to maybe talk a little bit about that? You said that your grandmother's Catholic and obviously we've got a scene of a baptism and then also this painting of your sister's First Communion.
Mm-hmm. Firstly, I paint for myself. Although I know that I want to share it with the world, there's this really weird thing of like wanting to paint for myself because I'm my first audience, but at the same time not knowing how much to reveal to the public and also wanting to protect my family. And it's this, I'm still figuring that one out. Mm. Inside jokes. Yeah, I mean, for me the most obvious one is like my brother, I shouldn't say brother, but I guess it's out. was cleaning the toilet when we were moving out of this really terrible house, leaky house in Pakuranga. There's nothing sort of jokey about it, but I know that certain objects that I paint, subject matter, like the mug that's on the floor, that's a lota, which is, I think a lot of Asians can recognize that as something that they use in their daily toiletry situation. They don't have toilet paper, so you just use a mug.
Throw some water down the squat toilet.
Yeah. And so that being out of context in Aotearoa, where we're not using that anymore, but we're using that to now wash the toilet. I don't know. I guess to me it was just kind of, this imagery is kind of important to me, and hopefully those in the know get it.
Yeah.
Those in the maybe Asian diaspora would kind of get it. And so the inside joke is probably for them. And then the inside joke will, another layer of it will be for my family. And like, they're going to recognize everyone here and they're going to be like, oh my gosh. So there's sort of like different layers to the inside joke.
I mean, another thing that we've talked about is, I guess, your desire to see brown bodies in what is traditionally a very white space. And I guess for me, it's quite unusual to see depictions of Indian bodies within Western Catholic kind of context. Did you want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I think that's something I'm still figuring out. For the past few years, I've been thinking about my own fake faith or lack of, and subconsciously started looking back at these images and started painting the baptism or the communion, my sister's communion, and how these sort of historical traces are relevant to my present, even if I feel unsure about some things about the faith. But I think what's more important is the idea of ceremony and community, and also deconstructing the idea that only certain types of bodies, white or whatever, are part of this religious activity, when actually it's important to know that there are probably more brown people that are Christian and Catholic and part of these religious institutions. I'm not really sure I still have to reflect what that means to me. I just don't know how to articulate it, but it was important to try and deconstruct this idea that only certain groups of people have the floor with this space, but actually some of us, most of my family members, you know, we're all a product of colonialism in some way. My surname's Diaz, and I've had Portuguese and British colonialism, you know, part of my family. And so Christianity, even though it's a spirituality, has somehow become part of culture. And that's a really interesting thing, the idea of like religion becoming a culture.
You were mentioning before about your use of brown and white paint. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
I guess if you see around, I use a lot of white in my paintings, and again, talking to like the idea of sacredness, I was kind of trying to challenge or think about what is sacredness. Like, can a toilet be sacred? Can spots in my mum's bathroom robe be sacred? Like, what is sacredness? And so this show specifically is really special because it has these sort of Catholic images that give context to the everyday and the sort of historical traces that that has in my family's everyday. Yeah, that was kind of like the symbolic part of it. But formally, I feel as though I love pushing brown skin to the background and kind of pushing and pulling white forward and seeing that contrast. And I love working with figure and ground and seeing how far I can blend the figure into the background and bring certain aspects of the, I don't know, pattern forward. Yeah, like, for example, in this painting, the flowers are, to me, the figure more than the figures, the bodies. And I feel the same with, like, my Nana's hair becoming a figure in itself and not necessarily her body. The toilet is as much as a figure as it is my brother cleaning it. And so are these costumes and, not costumes, the whatever.
The dresses.
Robes and stuff. Yeah. They become the figure as much as like the skin. And so I'm really interested in the idea of breaking down what is the figure and what is the ground, what is the background, what's the foreground.
Yeah, cool. Maybe we can open it up for some questions. Does anyone have anything they'd like to ask?
Do you still live with your family?
Yeah.
How's it going?
It's actually really good. I live with my stepdad, who's from here. Yeah, and it's like a totally different dynamic now. So, yeah, it's interesting how certain personalities can like totally change the vibe of a house and a family.
If, like, your memories of the photographs or the memories of the moment that you were painting, also kind of how much that kind of mediates the photograph you took.
A lot, I think, yeah. And I think about like the reason like some of these photographs are, or these paintings rather, are quite glowy, because I think of those photographs as glowy, but they're not necessarily glowy in real life. That's probably the difference between the paint. The photographs are just a reference point, but then I want to like figure out how paint gets me away and around. And that's the wrestle between, yeah, paint and representation. It's like paint has its own mind and then representation wants to like stick to the rules. And I hope that like over the next few years I get to really stretch that and really figure out what paint wants to do with figurative art. Many artists have already done that, but yeah, I'm just on my own journey with that. Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
I was wondering if you could speak a little bit to the inclusion of the painting groups.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I guess in 2020, I was really interested in gardening. I still am. That's kind of where I hadn't really talked about it, because I feel like I've sort of moved away from it, but the underlying methodology of this whole show and my practice has actually been influenced strongly by gardening and composting, as crazy as that sounds. When I was doing my master's, we had to do our methodologies and methods and whatnot. And I was thinking a lot about what is nature and what isn't nature. And that kind of led me to think about my family being nature. If we are to connect to nature to help with climate change or whatever, then we have to kind of deconstruct what we think is nature by connecting to the things that we know. What do we know? We know our family, we know the things that are surrounding us. And with that came actually going to grocery shops and being like, oh, I see this fruit like every day. It's the human and the non-human. It's textiles, it's patterns, it's everything. And so in a vague sense, it was about connecting to the non-human as well. In the past, I've painted like drawing lines, and I've done another painting of bananas that's just like been a recurring motif. But yeah, that's kind of why that's there. It seems a bit random. I hope it's not, but yeah. Thank you.
Thanks so much, everyone, for coming to this artist talk and to the opening. And I just wanted to say thank you to Brunel as well, because it's been such a pleasure working with you over these past 5 months. I've really admired your practice, and so it's been such a joy working with you. You've been wonderful. So thank you so much
thank you.
For being on this journey with me. And thank you everyone for coming. And that's us.
That was Brunel Diaz in conversation, talking about her solo exhibition, The Way Things Are at the Physics Room. Next, we have a number of poems by painter Nicola Farquhar. These poems were published in a recent artist-led publication, Heavy Trees, Arms and Legs. The publication was developed following a Physics Room offsite exhibition of the same name at the Suta Art Gallery, Te Aratoi o Whakatū, in 2021. Like Brunel, Nicola is interested in the construction of interior and exterior worlds, approaching painting as a tool for imagining regeneration in a time of ecological crisis. Now over to Nicola.
AI. A part of me will remain in your body forever, I say, as I press my fingers deep into the soft tissue of your arms. Luckily, we share the same microbiome. Everyone's getting along just fine, honey, you say from a distance. Distant planet I have eaten, and your body is like a universe, said I. I shine as bright as a diamond only when I circled all around the Earth's orbit. I was like a tiny bit of space junk without any consequential magnetism. Still, I radioed back home to you, knowing it will take light years. But we have an eternity, you replied by email, symbolically signing O. Burrow. I watch nervously as you are calculating the expected lifetime of my paintings, checking and rechecking, furrowed brow. Finally, 500 years, you whisper quietly, almost to yourself, as if I wasn't even in the studio. I hold up my hands, suddenly relieved that I have enough fingers for you to count on. My God, I exclaim, seeing them clearly for the first time, each with a tiny remnant of a fingernail at the end, barely visible. Yes, half a millennium of digits, you say solemnly to me, looking deep into my eyes. How will we make our art in the future? I ask you the big question, rhetorically demanding, rapidly flipping through the pages of a book. My eyelashes brush the inside of your head, fingers gripped around a blood-red heart. We will talk, you say defiantly. Your voice echoes. We will tell our stories, both forwards and backwards, playing with form. And the members of our audience will each be underlined, like hypertext. They will give us diverse, meandering interjections that take us in new directions. We will tunnel deep holes through the earth and out into the cosmos. Like earthworms, I ask tentatively, searching in my notes for a metaphor. Remind me how they reproduce, you ask, folding all your arms in front of your chest. Your body language indicates resistance. I write this down just in case it's useful for my report. I imagine myself as an unarticulated body, pressed up against another exactly the same. I'm so in love with you, I tell myself. Careful. As well as the artist and the doctor, there are 7 students in the room, taking notes. At the end of my right arm is a watermelon, a large stripy oval, easily the heaviest fruit on my body, pulling my arm down taut at my side. On my left is an apricot, disproportionately small. My wrist tapers to a sinewy thread, latching onto the fruit like an umbilical cord. But this apricot will never grow any bigger. Everyone's getting the message now that this lesson is all about locomotion. My right leg clearly ends with a pineapple, with pointy leaves projecting forwards like ignored toenails. The left leg has a coconut, hairy like a monkey, but hard and cold-blooded. My torso is pretty normal, except it has sharp bumps all over. Same ones as cucumbers sometimes have. But you can't peel me, obviously. Competition. We are sparring with our best gloves, and you say, shouting, goading. Don't you know the earth is round, you stupid? A circle has only one side. We don't have time for this kind of geometry, I reply, sitting on my hands. I'm exasperated, almost to the point of giving up. Should we not consider the concept, I say gently, that a circle might actually have an infinite amount of straight sides? Fuck eternity, you say indignantly, as if what you say will actually happen. I said infinity, I said, like I've had to explain this a million times already. Fuck you, you say simply, walking away. My legs are so tired, I think to myself. We have been searching out Muay Thai and try and maintain our balance while on our feet, whilst making contact, while kicking each other competitively in the face. We each appear to be bloodied and beaten, our eyes swollen shut, but our hands are untouched and soft and beautiful. We pause to admire their delicacy. Our fingers intertwine, and to compensate, I lick your palms. I'm confused by this feeling of being your pet, and make a point of smoothing down the hairs on my two legs, both aerodynamic and supersonic, and with wheels. A season. There is a season for everything, I heard, said quietly. Fruits and vegetables grow around me. I crouch on the ground, my ear pressed to a beat. There is a season for everything, it said, knowledgeable and primordial, earthy. Of course, I reply, and turn my face to the sky, my body full of eggs, sun ripened. There are just hatched turtles, digging out of the sand and hurrying towards the sea. The fallen leaves rustle under their feet. Autumn, I exclaim, and head back to the safety of my house. First person story. I said, the strangest thing has happened, honey. I said that a generous gift was coming our way. I said, we won't be using the stairs after this, honey. I said, we better get the launch pad ironed out flat. Get the iron out of my way, space junk. This ship is galactic. But I'm not shouting, I said. I said, if I can't stop sinking, I'll be molten soon, honey. I said, like molasses, except it's like a million degrees in here. And I can't even see my bones. I said, am I dissolving, just burning up in this heat, except I'm actually so cold, feel my hands, they're like ice, melting in the centre of the earth, honey. Can you still hear me? But I'm not shouting, I said. I said, I'm laying out a blanket, just like for a picnic. I said, pretend that the grass is greener and the breeze tickles our ears. I said, I will even lie on my side, propped up on my elbow like this. I'm sure there is a forest nearby, and we will be hearing birds soon, singing to each other like it's dawn, in a chorus, a cacophony. But I'm not shouting, I said. I said, okay, I will go to sleep soon, but don't mind if I keep talking. I said, I talk in my sleep sometimes. Out like a light or a fight I'm counting. Once I sleep walked right through the floor. Let's talk, I'm as bright as a parrot. Calling, hello, just don't forget I'm dreaming while you, honey. But I'm not shouting, I said. You said, well, I think it was you. You said, if you had fingers, you would be counting your blessings on your fingers, that I was here, and your heart, if you had one, would drum out a song, like all songs, except it's a song just for us, honey. You said, it's a shame I don't have ears, because I'd be a much better listener. I just want things to stay this way forever, I said. Leaf. I'm a two-headed leaf, layered over and over with like minds. Liking the view up here, laughing louder, the further I travel, giddy with excitement, I've got radial vision. I'm practically seeing stars going round in a circle. I'll draw you a picture. I change into a costume with four sides, representing the four elements. This time, hibernation makes me disassociative. I'm okay about it now. We learn to love our idiosyncrasies. Rivers course through my veins. I used to be a mountain, I remember that. There were lots and lots of trees. I could barely see my hands in front of my face. I could feel every footstep of every soul and hoof on my skin, and every fallen branch, fruit and bird, and everything. Who do you think I am? I shouted. It drove me crazy, these sensations. So I quit that. Haven't looked back. Definitely I chose to travel by air, by aeroplane. There was a boat, but the sheer depth of the water terrified me. And instinctively, I understood that I was soluble. Each time I crossed a time zone, I knew I was going to lose a limb. But I honestly believed, like a starfish, it would all grow back. It's not the first time I've been mistaken for another animal. I've never felt lonely or ever felt alone, and this is not even because I believe the truth was out there. When everyone was losing it over the lights, I kept saying, the Easter Island statues were made by the Rapa Nui people. I see that my legs are still longer than the length of my body. I can run faster than you, I whisper. Leap. I'm familiar with the edges of my limits, and that I could make it right across the river with one great leap. But after consideration, I thought it wise to jump straight into the middle of its length. It was the same distance, after all. Luckily, there was a canoe just within arm's reach, and I pulled it towards me and clambered in. I made my way along by paddling, left, right, left, right. It was not one of those rivers that go out to the sea. Fortunately, so I soon found myself on solid ground. I was aware that it was a perfect habitat for wild bears. And being wary of having the back of my head torn off, I walked along slowly, one foot in front of the other, with my hands up, saying over and over in a calm voice, I surrender, I surrender, and focus my eyes steadily ahead. Pretty soon I could see the horizon. Quite clearly, it represented the future. When I reached the cliff edge, I could get my head lower than my body. That's when I felt all the blood rushing back in. Sliding along safely on my back with my legs straight as an arrow, I was a surfboard on a huge wave. I liked the sensation of linear, growing momentum and started laughing helplessly, like one of those situations where you are completely out of control. Soon I was circling around and around and around, coming to a full stop as I reached my maximum capacity. I stood up and brushed off the grass and stones. No damage, I thought breezily, and walked up to the first house I saw. Could I please borrow your telephone or internet? I asked. Fortunately, it was a house full of birds, not wolverines. Passionately off-grid, They offered to fly me to the nearest airport. So that's how you came to see me up overhead. My soft underbelly in shadow, like an aeroplane above you. Gripped in the claws of opportunistic gulls. You always talk about how much you appreciate scavengers. And anybody that cleans stuff up generally, in fact. But now I've been dropped at your feet, and I'm on my feet myself, and we are eye to eye, and you are saying, horrified, "Oh my God, what happened to your face?" Learning. Sometimes I make things for my own amusement. When this happens, I'm checking my notes all the time. I can spot abbreviations and acronyms from a mile away. I'd say it's pretty instinctive. Actually, some things are difficult to learn. We each have suggestions, we say. An actor is a slippery fish. This is a theme, and we discuss this furtively in a group. Holding hands. There are many of us, and the volume goes up. This is where any line of inquiry starts to feel porous. When I'm asking you to soothe my feelings about this, and my arms and legs are falling off all over the place, as if you were actually after my tail, this is when I can start to piece together how you feel about me truly, and if you still care about visiting art galleries and museums and libraries, places like this that are just really, really crowded with stories about people like us that need to talk. And when the storm really hits, like it says on my phone, storm, I'm sure that this time there will be all kinds of animals hurtling down from the clouds like capricious raindrops that could literally crush our skulls. I'm going to lie down now. They are running and flying all over the place and slithering, which is like a horror movie. That takes me back. I turn to you, worried, and say, "What have we started?" We begin talking about a soft topic. Weather. The sun feels really good on my face. The wind winds me up, but I'm sensing freedom. The rain washes away my fears. The snow and her secrets, I sigh. Storms are for animals, animals, and animals.
That was Nicola Farquhar reading her poems from Heavy Trees, Arms and Legs. Nicola's solo show, Leonium, is on now at Coca until the 17th of December. I hope you all head along and support her work. Brunel Diaz's show, The Way Things Are, is on at the Physics Room until the 11th of December. We're open 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on weekdays and until 4 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. I really encourage you to come and see this fantastic show by Brunel. The Physics Room have a number of exciting events coming up, including a lecture from visiting artist, writer and curator Andy Butler. Andy is currently hosted by Artspace Aotearoa and joins us from Mengen, Melbourne. Andy will be giving a lecture at the Physics Room on Thursday the 24th of November at 5:30 p.m. The following week, we will be launching Correspondence 2.1. This issue originates from thinking about the idea of a spacious atrium as a place for growth, expansion, shelter, and critique.
Correspondence 2.1 launches on Wednesday the 30th of November at 5:30 p.m. For the final week of The Way Things Are by Brunel Diaz, we will be presenting a performance lecture by Balamohan Shingadi on Wednesday the 7th of December at 5:30 p.m. Balamohan studies philosophy in Tamaki Makaurau, where he's been living since his family's migration from the Deccan region of India. He's also a singer of Hindustani music and a curator. Finally, the Physics Room will wrap up the year with our highly anticipated annual fundraiser. We've got some amazing limited edition works by artists who have worked with us this year, so don't miss out. The fundraiser launches on Thursday the 15th of December and runs until Sunday the 18th, both online and at the gallery. Details of all these events will be available through our Instagram and Facebook, or you can subscribe to our mailing list to get notifications delivered directly to your inbox. You can do so by visiting physicsroom.org.nz. Thank you for listening. Tune in next month, on Friday the 16th of December at 8 p.m. for our next episode of Art, Not Science. Mā te wā.